Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 374 for comics originally released on October 8th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Batgirl number 35. This is the start of a new era of the character, according to the title page there. And we got a new creative team, new look for the character. Not just in terms of her outfit, her costume, but new art style here. And on the one hand, I like it. On the other hand, it's kind of different. It's a bit more, I almost want to say cartoony, but not, that's not entirely it.
It's youthful.
It's got a comic strip cartoony kind of a feel to it, but it's sort of realistic too. It's a very interesting blend of that. I was surprised how much younger she looked than she has in previous issues. I mean, it almost seems like she de-aged a couple of years. Because she's clearly doing college stuff as if she's a college student, putting her early 20s.
I would maybe 19.
Yeah. Well, but it's weird because they reference her physical therapy 3 years ago, and they've already established she was Batgirl. She was, you know, crippled by the Joker and stuff in the new 52 timeline. So how young was she when she started out as Batgirl, figuring she had to be active for some period of time before that happened? She seems a little too young in that respect. I mean, do you agree with that?
I stopped trying to follow DC's rules when the New 52 launched. I just gave up because none of it jives. It doesn't make sense. So I stopped thinking so my brain doesn't explode.
Probably a smart move. I'm too old-fashioned for that.
You want all the pieces to fit, don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, on the one hand, I don't really... It doesn't matter. It doesn't impact my enjoyment of it, of like, this issue or whatever. But it seems like every time they do this kind of shift, new status quo, the character seems a little younger. It's like it doesn't quite jive with what's gone before. It, on some level, it makes me question, well, why the hell was I reading what was going before?
Or you say, now wait a minute. Now, if then that means this. Oh, wait. That doesn't make sense. And that's the rabbit hole that you go down.
If the stories don't matter, then I shouldn't bother reading them. And that was one of the things about this issue that had me kind of thinking about it a little in not the good best of ways. But then the other thing is, I mean, first off, her new status quo is just a little odd. I'd have to reread the last issue Future's End stuff just to remember where they left this. But moving into a new place, multiple roommates, just seems like an odd choice for Barbara Gordon. You know, as witnessed by the fact she has her computer stolen in the first 24 hours of moving in. Not a good sign. Probably not the best of neighborhoods. I mean, it turns out to have been something else. But somebody with a secret identity getting into a situation where they've got to be actively protecting it against multiple roommates, and I don't know, it just seemed a little odd. A little impractical and a little poorly thought out.
Kind of like when Nightwing went to Chicago and had his roommates.
Exactly like that.
Very similar.
Have you ever watched the show Unforgettable?
Yeah. The procedural?
Police procedural. It's got Poppy Montgomery as the star. And her character has perfect memory and is often recreating crime scenes she's been to, walking through it and stuff like that. Much like we get in the double page spread in this issue, where Barbara is trying to think through who was at the party last night who might have stolen her computer.
Has she always been able to do that?
Yes and no. Yes, she's always had photographic memory. That's how they explain her being so good with computers, having so much information. We've never really seen it play out like this, and it very much reminded me of the show Unforgettable. Mm-hmm. I thought the artist did a great job with this here, but it's... a different take on an established aspect of the character, I guess. And it felt slightly derivative. I mean, is this something we're going to see on a regular basis? Are they just doing it to set up the character? I don't know. You know, it's a little bit of a confusing issue because major shift in tone, style for the character, the series, the whole kit and caboodle there. But we also got a very solid done-in-one story here. You know, not only did they set all of that up, but they had a mystery that plays out, some character interaction and whatnot. We get the new costume. There's an awful lot of story in this issue, and it's really kind of hard to beat that. So on that respect, I liked it, and it's not like I object to the art change or the memory way they're using that or anything like that. It's just going to take me a little bit to kind of, you know, adjust.
Yeah, and you know, in addition to Barbara being younger, de-aged, it seems like a much younger Canary as well.
Yes.
She doesn't seem like I remember her in anything else, especially not the Injustice, the way she's written in Injustice. They couldn't be further apart.
Well, I think the one in Injustice, as with the Oliver Queen there, is very much pre-52. That's classic Green Arrow and Black Canary. Whereas here, in the new 52, I mean, she's always seemed a little older than Batgirl, but figuring Black Canary was active in Team 7 five, 6 years ago, continuity-wise, and I think married at the time, she had to be at least mid-20s then, putting her probably around, you know, late 20s, early 30s. Now, we figure Barbara Gordon is somewhere around 20, give or take. You know, that's a 10-year difference there. It makes the pairing seem a lot odder than it usually was seeming over in Birds of Prey and some other places. And the way she was brought into this book with Black Canary, it's just everything she owned burned to the ground. It's like, well, that's a little contrived, interesting way to bring the character in. But I don't know, it felt a little forced, a little odd. We'll see if it plays out well. What did you think of the new costume and such?
I thought they'd spend a little more time with it. I thought it would be more eventful, you know, because it's been hyped a little bit leading up to this. So it was, you know, a couple pages and boom, there it is. And I kind of thought they'd do what maybe walk us through the creation of the costume a little bit and make it more of a thing than just a page of
a one page montage.
The montage scene from the A-Team, and then there it is. And I was kind of expecting more there. I like it though. I mean, it's fine. It's sure we'll get more into it. Maybe there'll be some more explanation of its utility down the road or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just expected a little bit more than we got. There's a lot of good stuff in here. I like a lot of it. It just really seems super young. And the demographic skewing a little younger than me, a lot younger than me. And the language is very millennial. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, that's okay. That's fine. It's just, that's just not my bag.
I think you've hit an important point there, particularly on the language and some of that. It made me feel old. And I'm not saying I'm not old. I mean, I'm not young. But it made me feel like this, like you said, it's aimed towards a much younger audience. And like almost like they don't want me as a reader on this anymore. I mean, they're not excluding me, but there were a couple of things. It just seemed, again, not aimed towards my age bracket, my demographic.
I don't fault DC for doing this because we'll be dead soon.
I'm not that old.
But I mean, we will die. And so they can't continue to write for old comic book readers. So they have to keep trying these things. Mm-hmm. They don't usually work, but they keep trying to reach out to younger readers, female readers and stuff like that. So that's good. And maybe it'll hit. And maybe it already has with Harley. And so I applaud the effort. But yeah, this isn't really written for you and I.
I mean, that having been said, I still really did enjoy it. It's going to take me a little bit to kind of get comfortable with this version. I kind of wish they had started like this with the new 52 versus doing what they did and then changing gears.
This is exactly what I thought they were going to do with the new 52. This type of reimagining. And this would have been a great number one for them 3 years ago.
If they had done it as a number one back then, I could see where it easily would have made my top five for the new 52. Done in one story, a fun, fresh take on the character, respectful of what had gone before. So yeah, the fact that it's not a new number one is a little, you know. Let me rephrase that. I like that it's not a new number one, but I'm also a little jarred by just how much of a direction shift it is from what we've already had in the New 52.
And given the new rules, the new unspoken, unwritten rules that we're seeing from the big two, this has all the trappings of a number one issue.
If they had wanted to do it as a new first issue, they easily could have.
Yes.
I respect that they did not. For me, this was a very solid 4 out of 5, fun read, and I definitely think it's got an audience out there that will love it. Whether they make it into comic stores, find it, and pick it up is another question.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the way it was laid out, the art style was pretty interesting. I liked the way they did the storytelling, and it felt fresh and new, and that was good. It didn't seem stale, and you know, I liked a lot about the story. It was a low 4 for me. It was good enough to make it into that 4 range.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that I'm going to stick with it for much longer. I'll probably read another one, but I don't know that it's something that I'll enjoy month in, month out.
That's understandable. I mean, things can be well done, but just not targeted towards you.
Yeah, it was well executed and worth checking out.
I agree. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sure.
This is Avengers X-Men Axis number 1. This is book 1, The Red Supremacy. It's going to be, a 9-issue weekly series? 2-page previously in, which for a new number 1 is always kind of fun. This has a large cast of characters. It juggles them fairly well. I think Rick Remender actually did a really good job with this issue. It had a lot going for it. It had a lot happening in it. There were also a few places where, particularly at the beginning, the Avengers dialogue felt a little much too bantery, with them quipping almost like they're all Spider-Man and stuff, which felt just a little out of character. It felt TV movie-ish. Got to get the one-liner for the trailer or something. And there are also a couple of things early on that I'm like, where is this coming from? You know, the Vision detecting sentience and rage from all the plants in the region. I'm like, he's an android. How was he sensing this? When did he get this ability and this power? I am confused. And then the new Captain America, just kind of de facto being the leader of the team, surprised me a little. I think the character, you know, Falcon did fine with that. But, you know, when you've got the Wasp, who's been a longtime leader of the team and stuff numerous times, seemed a little interesting, particularly when some of the characters really weren't following Falcon's lead. And then again, there was one or two other things with the Vision and whatnot that it's just, it felt a little out of character and off. But this is also very much spinning out of the events of Uncanny Avengers, which, you know, had a few things in its, as far back as its first issue, where it's like, yeah, they just didn't quite get that right. So there are continuity glitches, I guess would be the way to put it, but so much happened in this issue. They get the events really rolling along. There's a ton of characters. They usually all got a quick introduction, a moment in the spotlight, necessarily at the same time, sometimes later. Surprisingly, given the scope of this, it did not feel like an overcrowded issue to me. And this event also is picking up threads from numerous events, as far back as Onslaught, Avengers vs. X-Men, obviously the whole Unity Team stuff spinning out of Uncanny Avengers. And I think they told the story in a way that it'll make sense to people who haven't read all of that stuff that I don't say is leading up to this or was setting up this, but is at least referenced by this. But this is a story that really plays into the history of the characters, and I like that aspect of it. It's kind of a good use of continuity and things mattering. All in all, it was frankly one of the better events I've read out of Marvel these days. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, it wasn't a bad kick off to yet another event. If you like your comics crowded with a lot of characters, you get plenty to choose from here. The Kubert art is really, really well done, especially in the large 2-page spreads with giant groups of characters coming in at once.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really well done, really awesome. The Red Onslaught big spreads are great. I mean, he's really does a great job on the art in this thing. And where there's so many different characters that he's drawing, it's very impressive. Mm-hmm. It's very impressive in those large shots where they assemble or they enter or they crack some skulls or whatever. Those are really very impressive, and I like that. This I thought took a little while for me to get into, but by the end I was like, oh, okay, that's really cool and really enjoyable. So yeah, I thought it really picked up steam as it went along, and I just wish they'd take a little bit of time off between events and give me a break. But
fair point.
I'll definitely read this 9 issues and once again skip all the other tie-in issues unless I'm already reading them.
I do like the fact this is going to be a weekly paced story in terms of we're getting the next issue next week and then the next one the week after, lest somebody be confused and think I thought the pacing was just going to be weak as in not strong. But going with that weekly frequency, I think, is really going to help this, because if it took a couple of weeks or a month between issues, it's 9 issues, it's like, Jesus, yeah. Is it ever going to end? This is just going to keep coming at us as fast as we can take it, or maybe slightly faster.
Well, I mean, I've enjoyed the beginnings of many a Marvel event recently, and they've often limped towards the finish line, and I've been disappointed. Pretty much all of them since Age of Ultron.
How much of that do you think was just a weak story versus the amount of time it took for the story to play out? You'd kind of forgotten the beginning by the time it ended.
That's what I think. I was kind of following up what you said. I think you might be onto something. Maybe this weekly format will help it not feel like, you know, it's just ending poorly. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how that goes. Because, yeah, even Original Sin, which I really enjoyed it at the beginning, by the time it was over, I was like, okay.
Well, that one, I think the story actually did meander. I mean, yeah. I guess some of it is when you're reading stuff when it first comes out, going back to, like, Civil War, which had some huge delays, that impacts the reading experience. But then if you read the same thing in trade or just back-to-back, you know, in a single sitting or what have you, sometimes it still holds up, or it holds up better, or sometimes it's just, you know, it's really obvious that at this point, everything leading up to it was just a diversion or a play for time. These 3 issues were the ones that matter. You could have skipped the rest or something.
Which is annoying.
It's really annoying. I was really surprised how many different plot threads, though, this pulled in, how much it really leveraged aspects of continuity. But, I mean, continuity in the Marvel Universe is just a funny thing. Because, I mean, this is really paying off kind of the death of Professor X by Cyclops in Avengers versus X-Men. And I want to clarify which death of Professor X. Not the one where he was killed and reborn on a clone body by the Brood back in 1983, I think it was, in Uncanny X-Men 167.
Yeah, nice pull.
Or the time Legion killed him, causing the Age of Ultron back in X-Men second series, number 41 in 1995, or even one of the more recent times when Bishop killed him at the end of the Messiah Complex in X-Men 207 back in 2008. So, you know, the Professor has had some rough lives. It's just kind of funny. It's like, because when I first did this, it's like, wait a sec, who killed him this time around? And I had to go look it up. You know, it's funny. But that's one of the problems with continuity when you try to do big, I don't even want to say earth-shattering events, but character-killing events. How many times can some of these characters die? I would almost like to see, and I think Marvel's the one that should do it, an event in which, you know, some big character gets shot or killed or whatever. It's like, that's going to kick the story off or whatever. You know, like Cap on the stairs of the building, you know, at the end of whichever event that was. But the twist being, the afterlife rejects them. You know, you've come too many times. No, not now. We're not going to deal with you. You stay. And some of these become effectively immortal. You know, it's just, how would that play out? Because they've had a time or two where one or two characters, and I forget who it was in the Marvel Universe, had essentially been rejected by the afterlife. And it's like, okay, you're sticking around. Fun issue, good read, plenty of good stuff in there. I think it's, like you said, it's starting strong. Will it live up to that or not's the question. For me, very solid 4 out of 5, and I'm hoping the weekly frequency keeps it that way for me during the run.
Yeah, it's also a 4 for me. I really enjoyed it. Ahab, I was not familiar with. What has he been in?
He was in some of the annuals, among other places, back in the mid-90s, Days of Future Present or something. He ties into the whole apocalypse stuff. He is from an alternate future, I believe. And That's about all I can recall off the top of my head.
And Genesis, is he one of the kids at the Wolverine and the X-Men school?
Yes, he is the current reincarnation or whatever of Apocalypse.
Okay.
So there's the question of, is he going to turn evil at some point? Is he not? Is it, you know, nature versus nurture? Yeah, that whole question.
It's a big cast of characters.
Yeah, but they at least kept it, you know, manageable given how many there were.
Yeah, and they kept moving along and building. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting. And I'm glad to see them doing it weekly.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah.
This is Birthright number 1 from Image Comics. This was one that, when I saw it in previews, I looked at it, I considered it, but decided to pass on it. So when you suggested we do it for the episode, I pulled down the PDF version on the press site and read that. And overall, the concept is good. I think it's solid, but it also originally felt like something that just wasn't really in my wheelhouse. And reading it kind of, you know, I don't say proved that point to me or whatever, but I stand by my assessment. This issue sets everything up, gets well past being just set up. The story's in full swing. We get a good reveal at the end of the issue, which surprised me. It's like, oh, they could go in a different direction than I thought they were. And the next issue could really continue in one of a couple of different ways, all of which I think would be fun. I just don't know that it's a story I need to follow. And again, nothing right or wrong about that. This is getting a little more into the fantasy realm and that sort of a stuff than I tend to usually get into with the stories I read. What were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I can see that. I liked it, though. I enjoyed what it was trying to do. I really liked the family stuff a little more, and the angst that the family was going through was really, really emotional stuff. You could really feel it on the page. And then to have them drop the son back into the picture about halfway through this, got to be a double-sized issue. It was really, we got a lot of story here for this first issue. And, you know, you get one, you think you get part of the story, and it becomes a little more fantastical, and there's this other world with these strange, very creatures ripped out of Asgard. And, you think you're getting one thing, and then the final panel zigs again, and so now there's something else, and I found that really interesting. I would rather it would just kind of reunite the family, and we spend some time doing that, just in overcoming the aging of the kid and things like that. I was just kind of hoping that's what the story was, and then the extra twist I could have done without. But I guess that makes it a little more interesting down the road, and hopefully that doesn't dominate this first arc, because I would really like to see some more growth in the family, get some more time with them, how they, you know, they've got this much older version of the son they lost now to deal with, and I want them to deal with that for a while. Get him out of the prison or out of jail and kind of deal with that for a little bit. And it feels very reminiscent of Resurrection. I don't know if you watched that show on television or not, but that kind of, you'd have thought they were gone. Now they're back. Now what do you do?
I caught the pilot episode, and that's all I've watched of the show.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of read the essay in the back by the writer, Joshua Williamson. And basically the kernel for this is, you know, when you're a kid and you dream of these adventures, and after your adventure, okay, and you get to do everything you wanted to do in these adventures, okay, then what? What's after that? Mm-hmm. So that's much different than really what this first issue was. So it'll be really interesting to see him come back to this original idea, probably spending more time with the returning son.
Well, that's where I was a little confused by this, though, because the next issue could continue with young Mikey and his adventures in the other world, you know, and how he got to where he gets, or it could continue in the present day with this older version of Mikey back on Earth, how they adjust as a family, or it could do both, kind of alternating between the two, kind of like this did. And, I mean, all of those are interesting stories to go down. But if the kernel of this idea is, as that text page indicated, the kid goes off, has the adventure, you know, and is just the hero, the you know, all that cool stuff. And then they've got to return to the mundane world. That's a cool premise. I like that premise. I don't know that's really, like you said, what we're getting here to a degree. This seems like, at least for me, just a little bit of a swing and a miss. Because in addition to it not really being what I think the author kind of is pitched it as there, a lot of the early part of this issue was really focused around the dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And it took me a while. It's like, oh yeah, the kid's name, what was it? Oh yeah, it was Mikey. That's what it was. And I would have been happy almost following the dad's story a bit further.
Well, it felt like issue one, you could have cut this in half, issue one and issue two almost. Mm-hmm. Issue one was spending most of the time with the kidnapping and the dad and his downward fall. And then the cop coming and saying, I need you to see something, and bringing me in, and there he is. Mm-hmm. You know, and that could have been the end, and then start the next issue. But I applaud them for putting them together, because those are two different stories.
Yeah.
You know, the front half and the back half of this are very different. And, you know, I think when you put them together, you kind of get a sense of what this could become. It's not the second half. It's not the first half. Mm-hmm. It's a blending of the two. And you either dig that and are down to hang out with that in that world, or you're not. And I think I'm going to stick around through the first arc, see how they get what it becomes. So I liked it a little more than you do, I think. For me, it's a 4 well-executed first issue that I am going to stick around and check out the next issue on.
I think you did like it a bit more than I did. For me, it's a solid 3. I think there are a lot of people that are really going to like this title, and I didn't dislike it. It just didn't really click with me. Part of that's just also the genre and some of that stuff. And I think if I followed it, I don't think I'd be necessarily disappointed, but I don't feel the need to continue with it. You know, the premise is good. The genre is just okay to me. And the fact that I don't have any particular character, be it young Mikey, old Mikey, the dad, the mom, the brother, you know, whatever, that I feel, ooh, I want to see what they do next. But I will say that the fact they gave this the additional pages and stuff was a really smart move. I think if they had not, and it had ended kind of where you suggested, that break of, hey, you know, and the reveal of here's old Mikey or whatever, definitely would not have necessarily come back for that. Yet if it had just been the stuff in the second half or whatever, I don't know that that would have been enough either. So I like the fact that they're trying to kind of balance the two. I'm not sure where they're going with this, and I'm going to be interested to hear what you think of future issues.
Yeah, yeah, I'll see how it pans out.
So I am almost caught up on my reading. I've got a few things from this week left to read, a few things from last week or whatever. There is just a ton of comics coming out these days.
Good stuff, too.
What were the highlights of this week for you?
Some real standouts for me. Witches, number one, Scott Snyder and Jock. Another Image book. I thought that was really good. I'm not really into the horror genre, but this one was an exception. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done and spooky. And Scott Snyder also had a 3 or 4 page essay in the back, talking about where this story came from. Mm-hmm. And, when he was a kid and his, going on witch hunts as an 11-year-old boy with his friend and the things that they saw that stuck with him for years after. And it's just been festering and this is what's come out of him from that. And I just love that, writer's process that he was kind of going through, and it made me enjoy the book even more after I read it. I just thought that was great. Really good debut. I think this is a little bit creepy, a real creepy book, but really good stuff. And over at Avatar, I was really happy with War Stories number one, the Garth Ennis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's done a War Stories book at Vertigo and Dynamite before.
I think so, yeah.
So, but this is at Avatar. So I like the art in Avatar. It's really bright and crisp and it's well done, and this was a really good War Stories anthology that, you know, very reminiscent of weird war tales from DC way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't read that sort of stuff for a while, so that was really nice. And I'm glad this is back. I hope he gets to write it here for a while. I don't know, war books, they don't really sell that well, I don't think. So I hope it sticks around for a while, because I like those sort of stories, and there's not that many of them out there. I thought Astro City is another passion project. This one was Astro City 16, and Kurt Busiek wrote a little essay in the back about this had been sitting in his drawer for years. This was something he wrote for DC as a backup feature in Action Comics, I think. DC sent him a note saying, well, we're not doing that backup feature anymore, but thanks for your submission. And so it just sat and languished in a drawer for a while. And, 25, 30 years later, he dusts it off, freshens it up, and it becomes this Astro City story, which is really, it was really a great story. It was, he's saying some things here about gender and bullying, really important stuff, but in a great story. So, I do this every month, but this is a fantastic series.
Oh, Astro City is excellent. It's something that I really wish more people were reading, because it's got a depth to the story. The amount of going from just a blank slate almost every issue about a particular character, it's really fleshed out, and you feel like, wow, I've been reading that character forever. It's just amazing how much story and coolness he can put into, every issue almost. Now, there have been a couple that were just, okay, but I don't know that there's ever been a bad issue of Astro City. And there have been a couple that are just brilliant. So it's a series I highly recommend.
Did you enjoy this particular issue?
Yeah, I thought it was great stuff. Very solid 4 out of 5. Again, that's a title that really rarely dips down as low as, say, even a 3. It's just, it's consistently good. I like how it explores different facets of a world that has superheroes.
Yeah. What do you think of Copperhead 2?
I liked it. I thought it was solid. It was good.
A little drop off from issue 1, I felt.
Yeah, a little, not by much for me.
Okay.
I think it was fairly consistent quality. It's fun to see a different kind of a story, Old West in space sort of a thing. Anyone who likes something like Firefly or Defiance or things like TV shows like that should be checking it out.
Nightcrawler, I had almost given up on and was going to stop reading it, and read issue 7, which I think is released out of order a little bit.
It came about a week early,
but I know what's coming, so I was okay with that.
Well, with the whole death of Wolverine as the name of the miniseries, I think we know where it's going.
But this was really, probably a little more boring for you maybe, but for me it felt so heartfelt. It was just like a love letter from Kurt to Logan. I didn't know all of this stuff, but I remembered most of it, and it was great little, I forgot that. Yes, they did that together. They had that adventure. Yeah. They did that. That's what that meant to each other, and why that's important. And it was just like the history of the X-Men in one comic.
Well,
it was great.
Definitely a walk down memory lane, and those two have been fast friends or whatnot. But the funny thing is, you could have done the same sort of story with Nightcrawler about Colossus or Kitty Pryde or, a few of the other X-Men and stuff. But doing it with Wolverine, it was funny how much of it was just kind of a retrospective of Nightcrawler's past and then Wolverine's. And then the whole thing was very, like you said, heartfelt and a good, I don't say send off to the character of Wolverine or whatever, but a kind of a salute to him, whatever. It was, those are the more quiet, reflective issues I wish were done a little more often. And given how many times various characters die and whatnot, it's hard to pull off an issue like that and really have it connect.
It's funny you mentioned that it could have been any of the other characters, because as I was reading it, I was thinking, you know what? You could flip this around really easily and have Wolverine doing the narration talking about Kurt dying.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have worked, because, there was pretty much the same scenes and he died not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're really, it was interchangeable the way you, and they both had died, and it seemed very similar. But it was fun. It was a really cool issue, I thought. It just a week early.
At some point, I want to see a scene where somebody is walking down one of the hallways in the X-Men mansion, and you've got pictures of the various students with the plaques, and it's got their, you know, born, so-and-so died, so-and-so reborn or resurrected, redied, you know, a couple of different date ranges for some of these characters. See who has the longest list. You know, presumed dead, found at, you know, what have you. Yeah, I'm loving the Nightcrawler stuff. It's a lot of fun.
This was probably my favorite issue so far.
Well, you know, it's funny because in an earlier one, they had an exchange between him and Colossus when Colossus was so happy Nightcrawler was back. And he's like, hey, I went to your funeral, too. I mean, the death and return thing, particularly from a character, you know, who just came back from the dead, is just such a very religious character at that. A very bizarre and fertile ground for storytelling there.
Yeah. I thought the new Batman arc that's from Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo was really awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen them bringing in the rest of those characters, you know, since he started his run. All the members that kind of guested in this issue,
mm-hmm.
Since Scott started, he hasn't had any of those characters in here, has he?
I don't think so. Of course, half that run's been 0 year, so maybe not.
Yeah, the other half has been Court of Owls and Death of the Family, so
yeah.
It's tough to squeeze them in. But I thought this was really cool to see Capullo draw all these other characters, and I don't know how much of that is, you know, it's on the cover, so I guess it's you kind of know that it's who's going to be in there. But it's fun. The interactions are really great.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some really cool reveals in here. And it's a really, I'm not sure how long this one will be going on for. Hopefully it's not another epic arc, but, it's really was a fun launch into a new storyline.
It's a great time to be a Batman reader. Both the Batman title itself, Batman Eternal's got some great stuff going on. There's no shortage of Batman material that's well worth reading that's coming out right now.
Oh, yeah.
Did you pick up Earth 2 and Earth 2 World's End?
No, I have it, and I haven't read it yet.
I was a little frustrated by these because Constantine also is tying into this stuff. And I got a good couple of pages into Earth 2 World's End before it hit the title page saying, oh yeah, this takes place, you know, after the events of Earth 2 number 27 that also came out this week. Okay, let me stop reading that. Let me go get the other one. Oh, now I'm back up to speed and where they're going. We've got Huntress and Power Girl back on Earth 2. They've did some really interesting stuff with the relationships with some of the characters that are on Earth 2 and those two now. I think that's going to kind of revitalize that title a bit. And this whole bit with, you know, what's going on with the World's End for Earth 2, how that's going to potentially tie into the Future's End or whatever's happening when all these things kind of collide together at the ends of their run. It looks like a lot of fun. I'm really anticipating a Crisis on Infinite Earths sort of a thing around the March, April, May timeframe or whenever they're planning on doing it. I've been seeing a lot of signs of the multiverse being really actively in play these days, including a little bit at the end of Superman Doomed number 2 a week or two back, where it teased some stuff. So again, just ton of great stuff to be reading.
Oh yeah, this is a really solid week. A lot of good stuff. I enjoyed almost everything I was on my stack.
I'm enjoying a lot of what I'm reading, but there's also a few that I'm really wondering, you know, should I continue with the title or not? The one that I'm going to continue with, because it's a miniseries, is Death Defying Dr. Mirage. The art is just not clicking with me, and it's making it hard for me to get into that story. And then the other one that's just gotten a bit gorier than I like, and is just, I'm not sure it's continuing to go somewhere I want to follow, is God is Dead by Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
So there are a couple I'm rethinking.
Yeah, Hickman dropped off that a long time ago, didn't he?
I think he did the first issue.
Well, that was it.
He may have done a little more, but yeah, he's not been on that book for a while. I think he was the creator of, not the lead writer or what have you.
Yeah.
And they've done some interesting stuff there. It's just getting a little less interesting to me these days. But yeah, tons of great stuff. Worth pointing out that the online solicits for the next previews, I believe I saw one of them up already as we record this on Comic Book Resources. The others should be up either by the time the episode is released or shortly thereafter. The deadline for the next preview spotlight is going to be November 8th, that Saturday morning. Again, I really appreciate people sending in clips early this last time. That helped me out a lot since I was doing the number crunching, the preview spotlight, editing a few other episodes, and there was a convention going on that weekend here in town. So having the extra lead time really helps, and I really am enjoying a lot of the clips these days. There have been a couple that it's like, ooh, I need to be checking that out.
Or, yeah, it was a good mix.
Oh, yeah. Tons of stuff. And I think we're going to be hitting the point where Marvel's teasing a lot of event sorts of things and bringing back some past events in various ways. DC's got a couple of new titles, I think, coming out. And there's always a bunch of stuff that's worth pointing out. So I like it when people, you know, send in the clips and just help me find stuff that I may miss when I'm going through previews. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, that'll do it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Trinity of Sin number 1 from DC, Death of Wolverine number 4 from Marvel, and Doctor Who the 12th Doctor number 1 from Titan Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.